Welcome to today's Innovative Ideas podcast. My name is Paul Howard, and I'm a senior fellow and director of the Manhattan Institute's Center for Medical Progress. Our guest today is Christopher J. Conover, a scholar at Duke University's Center for Health Policy and Inequalities Research and an adjunct scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. He's also an editor for the Journal of Health Politics, Policy and Law and the U.S. Health Policy Gateway. I have today his terrific book, American Health Economy Illustrated. It's the single best fact book on healthcare that I've ever seen. It's extraordinarily comprehensive and well written, and really a joy to read if you're any kind of a health policy wonk, as I am. Chris, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Paul.
Chris, I'd like to talk about a few of the, at least for me, the more interesting tables in your book. And I'd like to frame it in terms of two myths of U.S. healthcare spending, or at least the way U.S. healthcare spending is perceived, and then three realities that should frame how policymakers and the public think about potential solutions to the U.S. healthcare woes, or at least potential solutions there. To start with, I think that one of the myths that's out there is the U.S. is an outlier in terms of healthcare spending. It's extraordinarily wasteful, and if only we got more people into the system, and I think that this is one of the president's concerns that led to the passage of the Affordable Care Act, getting more people in the system would make us more like our European competitors who have universal health insurance coverage and have lower costs. But when you look at the U.S. system, there's a very interesting wrinkle in terms of how the U.S. compares in terms of out-of-pocket spending compared to many of our OECD competitors. And this is a table in your book that talks about the 20 largest economies in the OECD. Could you talk about U.S. out-of-pocket spending in relation to our competitors?
Well, there was a concern that the U.S. health system leaves people to the wolves, but surprisingly, among the 20 largest economies in the industrialized world, the U.S. actually has the fourth lowest share of health spending that is paid for out of pocket, at just over 10% of all health spending. Now, this is in spite of our having 50 million uninsured, but in reality, even among people who are uninsured the entire year, about two-thirds of their health spending is actually paid for by someone else, you know, whether it be government programs coming in to backfill or write-offs and that sort of thing. Now, that's not much different than in Switzerland, which has universal coverage, but where the average citizen pays more than 30% of their health spending out of pocket. And I think that Obamacare framers mistakenly thought that the problem was not enough insurance, but in reality, most Americans have too much health insurance. And this is the principal reason we have excess health spending in this country. From my point of view, we could replicate the pathologies of the American health system simply by introducing third-party coverage. So, for example, if I offered to pay 90% of whatever you put into your grocery cart, what do you think would happen? You know, what you bought would change. You'd be buying more steak and less tuna, presumably.
Filet mignon every
day. The prices that you paid for would also be that much higher because you'd be price insensitive. And if most people had food insurance of this sort, then grocery stores would soon begin to offer more expensive food and would end up competing on quality of their service rather than price. And that's exactly what we see in the healthcare system.
So there's this perception that in a lot of other healthcare systems that are at least a single payer or universal payer coverage systems, consumers don't pay anything out of pocket. But you show that, you know, just the opposite. You still have very significant amounts of money. In the case of Switzerland, 30% of out of pocket spending, which creates another break on healthcare utilization. Is that fair?
Right. Exactly. I mean, I think having some higher out-of-pocket exposure actually is a good thing as long as we're covering catastrophic costs with insurance. That's what insurance is for. And, you know, we're making the same mistake in higher education. College tuition actually has increased at twice the rate of healthcare costs over the past 25 years. And we think the solution to the affordability problem is greater subsidies rather than relying on competition to hold down prices and costs. And in pieces of the healthcare system where we do allow market forces and there's very little insurance, things actually work out as we expect. That is, we see fierce price competition for things like LASIK surgery, with the result that average prices are much lower today than they were 10 years ago, even though the quality has improved greatly.
Yeah, there's an important point to be made there that people assume that healthcare is just, you know, so different from other sectors of the economy that normal market forces can't work there. But in other sectors of the economy, you do have extraordinary complexity. You used the example of LASIK. You could also talk about automobiles, obviously. At least I don't know how an automobile works in any given detail.
Yeah, computers, electronics, right. Those are very complicated purchase decisions, and yet people make them every day.
And the important point is just having consumers in the market creates competition among sellers to drive costs down and compete for market share. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to buy a good computer because Dell or the other computer companies will figure out a way to get you a product, a bundled product that's affordable to you.
Right, right. And so at the end of the day, Obamacare not only extended coverage to the uninsured, but it also made coverage more lavish for everyone else who already had sort of too much insurance to begin with. So now we've got free preventive health care services, including contraceptives. You know, that not only tramples on religious liberty, but it makes as much sense as requiring auto insurers to cover the cost of putting gas in your car. You know, if we did that, it would make consumers less cost conscious about buying things like gasoline, and it would add a completely avoidable administrative cost of maybe $10 or $15 per claim that simply drives up the cost of coverage. That really doesn't make sense. That's the direction Obamacare took us.
To require insurers to cover people under 26, I think insurers are, as a rule, happy to do that because those are people with very low utilization. They're cheap to cover. And at the same time, it's an extra profit margin. People would normally not pay for that extra coverage because typically they don't need it for that population.
Right. Well, everyone needs catastrophic coverage, but the problem is Obamacare is encouraging very, very comprehensive coverage, and it's going to end up increasing the cost of healthcare in the U.S., not bringing the cost down.
And I think
Affordable Care Act is very false advertising. It's the Unaffordable Care Act.
And there seems to be, I think, consensus on this point right now, at least information I've looked at from the Congressional Budget Office, for instance, said, look, this is going to increase the cost of care. Subsidies will increase so that, you know, there's going to be some shifting in the market in terms of the premiums that, say, older uninsured people face for that insurance package versus younger people. But overall, this is a cost increase.
Absolutely. Right.
And I think there's another myth out there that part of the problem, or at least perhaps the central problem with U.S. healthcare is, you know, pick your greedy industry, whether it's greedy pharmaceutical companies, greedy insurers. And if we were to just reduce or eliminate the profit margins, and the law does this through something called the medical loss ratio to limit the profits that companies can take, insurance companies can take in that market along with their administrative costs. But you also have a great table here that looks at profit margins in, you know, at least for health insurance and managed care and how they relate to other industries. Could you talk about that for a moment?
Right. Well, it turns out that no matter how you measure profits, your return on revenue, return on assets, or return on equity, the profits of health facilities and even health insurers are basically in the middle of the road among all industries in the U.S. So the return on revenues for health insurers, for example, typically range from 3 to 6%, and that puts the industry in the lower half of earnings among all industries across the country. Now, admittedly, the earnings for pharmaceutical companies typically put them in the top 5 industries in the country, but you need to remember that the patent system deliberately gives them a time-limited monopoly over brand-name drugs to encourage them to invest in R&D, which they do to the tune of tens of billions of dollars a year. And the CBO has looked at profits in the pharmaceutical industry, and they've concluded that once you take into account the riskiness of that business, because, you know, the cost to bring an average drug to market is in excess of $1 billion. That's a huge gamble for a company to take. There's no guarantee, you know, that there's going to be a payoff from that huge investment. So when you take into account the riskiness of the enterprise, the profits in the pharmaceutical sector turn out to be comparable to that of the rest of industries in the U.S.
And in terms of
now, the other part of this, the silly part, is that more than half of the revenues in the health services industry actually turn out to be from public or nonprofit facilities. All told, profits account for about 1% of U.S. healthcare spending, which is to say we could wipe out profits and we'd end up saving 1 cent out of every dollar.
And when you even if you look at absolute spending, say on just prescription drug pharmaceuticals, that's about 10 or 11% of U.S. healthcare spending, and then profits a tiny sliver on top of that or out of that that share
Right. And here again, I mean, what happened is that Obamacare was designed by people who mistakenly believed there was too much profit in medicine and it needed to get squeezed out. So there was this fierce fight over the public option. Medical loss ratio restrictions, which, like any price controls, have already had an adverse effect that it, by encouraging some small insurers to actually leave the market entirely. And accountable healthcare organizations have been designed largely to bypass those health insurers, which you'll remember the president vilified repeatedly during the healthcare debate. However, as my AEI colleague Scott Gottlieb has pointed out, ACOs likely are going to end up being local monopolies that drive up prices and may jeopardize quality. And the way he arrives at this conclusion is that we've got very solid empirical evidence that competition among hospitals is welfare enhancing up to about 4 facilities in a geographic area. That means, when I say welfare enhancing, I mean that it produces lower prices and or better quality of care. Yet ACOs move the system in the opposite direction by encouraging these local monopolies. Moreover, the ACOs are designed to favor hospitals, which Scott has pointed out do not exactly have an inspiring track record of innovation. So we'll see how this plays out, but I'm not particularly optimistic about how the ACO experiment is going to go under Obamacare.
And it's daunting when you look back at the track record. I mean, I think that the record is that hospitals have actually fought a number of different care innovations, whether it was physician-owned hospitals, most recently urgent care centers, that protections that over time both states and the federal government build in for particular sets of providers have led to higher costs and poorer quality care.
Right, and then the real irony is that organizations like Geisinger Clinic and Mayo Clinic and Kaiser, et cetera, they were the models for the ACOs. The regulations for ACOs were so complicated that these organizations said we're not interested in becoming an ACO. You know, so it just shows that what happens when you know they're well intentioned. But once government gets involved in healthcare, it has a great capacity to sort of screw things up, and that's unfortunate.
Well, because the market, in every other part of the economy works to, you know, through competition to drive down prices, increase the quality of products over time for consumers. We've walled off healthcare and said it's, you know, basically a special place where normal laws of rules of economics are not going to apply. But even in a best case scenario, and you've got a chart on this, even in a best case scenario, if the health law reform works as intended, so everything comes up roses for the law, which the law of unintended consequences applies to everything. So that's unlikely to happen. But even if it did happen, talk about for a moment about the unfunded liabilities for entitlements we're facing, you know, even in the best case scenario.
Well, this is what's sort of scary. The CBO's projected that even under Obamacare, the federal government is going to grow 41% over the next 75 years relative to as a share of the economy. So every penny of this increase is going to be related to growth in health entitlements, that is Medicare, Medicaid, and these new exchange subsidies. Now, this is actually nothing new. From 1967 to 2007, as I show in my book, every penny of the increase in the size of federal, state, and local governments as a share of the economy also could be attributed to growth in tax-financed healthcare spending. Now, I've calculated that within 75 years, the unfunded liabilities for entitlements will end up amounting to about one-third of payroll. That means we'd have to triple current payroll taxes or get the revenue equivalent from other taxes in order to finance this shortfall. Now, the rich already make up the lion's share of federal taxes already, so there's no way to load all or even most of this added burden onto them. So the only way we're either going to have to cut healthcare costs really dramatically, or we're going to have to impose very damaging levels of taxes on all Americans. And taxes are very damaging to the economy. According to Obama's former economic advisor, Christina Romer, every 1% increase in taxes as a share of the economy results in a 2 to 3% decline in GDP. So when the CBO says the federal government's going to grow as a share of the economy by 9 percentage points over 75 years, that is very, very scary to think of all that being financed through higher taxes.
And it always baffles me because the debate started, the president led and sold the debate by way of saying, look, we've got to bend the curve of U.S. healthcare spending.
Right.
But even if you could do that through increased revenues, what you're essentially doing is you're taking money out of the rest of the economy and you're funneling it into a sector that, you know, on the left and right, we agree that it's fundamentally dysfunctional right now in terms of how it operates. And yet that's the trajectory we're on right now. And in the current deficit and debt discussions, the president has basically said he's going to wall off Medicaid and perhaps Medicare as well from any additional reforms.
Right. And what's very concerning is, you know, historically we have had a huge margin of advantage over our competitors in Europe. And that's because we have relatively low levels of taxes. You know, progressives will say we're an under-taxed country. Well, you know, as I just said, taxes are very damaging to the economy. And unfortunately, the increase in tax-financed health spending over the next 50 years is going to be so large that relative to these other countries, which also are going to have to increase their tax-financed health spending to keep up with changes in their population, aging, and that sort of thing. But we're going to have a much bigger problem because we started a lower level of tax-financed health spending to begin with. The point is, I've got a chart in my book that shows that the growth in that tax-financed spending as a share of the economy is going to more than wipe out our current margin of advantage over these other countries in terms of our tax, you know, having a low relative level of taxes compared to GDP.
So
that means that in the future we can't count on faster growth to keep ahead of our competitors. We're going to be just in the same boat as they are, with slow growth and you know, fewer opportunities for America.
And what I also like about that table that you look at, you see that over time between 1993 and 2010, the relative burden of government in our competitors has actually dropped. So for Canada, it went down. For Italy, it went down. For Germany, went
right.
down. United
right.
States, it's gone
Yeah, we're
up.
Moving in the opposite direction, sadly.
And so let me bring it back, you know, to wrap it up where we started, which I think you were getting at, which is there is a prevailing assumption, and I think that most Americans think this way on the left and the right again, that better insurance, or more insurance is better insurance, and that we're not going to get to what I think you and I probably agree is a more consumer-directed environment until that automatic assumption gets challenged in a way that forces us to think, you know, is that really true? Is it really better to spend more of our money? And all this money is just coming from us. It's coming from our salaries, our future ability to invest in any other priority with education or anything else. What's going to change that understanding of this assumption that richer insurance, health insurance packages are just, you know, good in and of themselves, and we ought to be doing more to push, you know, richer insurance packages and less out-of-pocket spending?
Well, I don't know how to change that perception. What I do know is my numbers show repeatedly that if we want to contain the size of government, the only way to do that is to contain the cost of health care. And in my view, the way to do that is to get government out of health care, not increase the role of government in health care. And Obama is basically taking us in the opposite direction. And that's why, in my view, I sort of agree with Jim Capretta and Jeffrey Anderson, who've recently put out a great article saying delay, repeal, replace. You know, we should do everything in our power to delay the damaging effects of putting this law into place, and hopefully maybe we can get the political will to get enough members of Congress to come in and repeal, you know, most or all of the law, and then get going on a more, much more market-oriented vision, where we, you know, have a patient-centered system, put power into the hands of patients to make choices, instead of centralizing all that decision-making power in Washington, which we, you know, we already have. We've got plenty of evidence that when Washington's in charge of anything, it doesn't do a particularly good job.
But to get back to your point, I maybe I'm wrong about this, but I think maybe if you can get to explain to Americans, look, you want to be protected from health insurance, you know, rogue health insurance costs or events in the same way that you buy insurance for your car, insurance
right.
for your home. They're against
right.
catastrophic events. You don't use it to replace your carpet when your dog maybe pees on it. You don't use it to, you know, pay for every scratch you get on your car, because your premiums would then skyrocket. And because you're paying for those premiums out of your pocket, you know that
right.
that's not a good value for you. And then just shifting
right.
to the system in that way, and even if you hadn't said, okay, there's going to be, you know, large protection at the very bottom of the income scale for low-income Americans or for poor Americans, but everybody else should be paying more out-of-pocket through catastrophic coverage. That would give us the kind of protection we want, but at the same time induce a lot more cost discipline in the system.
Right. Absolutely.
Terrific. Chris, it's been terrific talking with you. It's an amazing book. It has a wealth of information, American Health Economy Illustrated. It's available on Amazon, and look forward to talk to you again in the future.
Thanks so much, Paul. I enjoyed it.